Welcome to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring the random prompts of Daniel Rosehill as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters. Join us for deep dives into AI, technology, and whatever other random thing Daniel finds fascinating today. Subscribe on Spotify or your favorite podcatcher. Now, today's episode.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hi there, Herman and Corin. So we've talked before about the circadian rhythm, and I mentioned how I've been on a general kick to reduce blue light exposure at nighttime through wearing those ridiculous goggle-style glasses. And I mentioned also that speaking about redundancy and things that break, my LCD monitors are at some point in time, I have three of them in my array. They've miraculously survived for 10 years somehow, but I'm just waiting for the day that they croak, because one of them already did. I swapped out the capacitor, and it's way past the point at which they've been retired from the product line from AOC. So I was kind of sizing up what the options were, and I was looking at modern monitors and kind of how the market has moved. And I see that blue light protection, you can do blue light filtering, of course, at the operating system level with tools like Twilight, Redshift, Windows. Every OS now has a decent amount of tooling. But another way, and I think arguably it actually makes a lot more sense, is to do it on the monitor itself, so that you don't need, even if you're using an OS or plug in an old computer that doesn't have anything for red light, you can just do it on the display level. So that's a technology that I'm interested to know about. But it brings me on to thinking about, my friend asked me recently if I have a spare e-ink monitor. And I was like, well, no, actually, I don't. That would be a very strange thing to just have lying around. My wife is laughing because I think she knows who I'm talking about. But e-ink is another alternative if you're looking for thinking about things that are easier on the eyes. E-ink readers have a major advantage. Everyone who's used a Kindle has had that experience of feeling like they can maybe read the text a lot easier. It's far less strainful on the eyes. And there have been a couple of attempts over the years to create e-ink based tablets and full e-ink displays for screens, but they've definitely never taken off into the mainstream. Why that is, it does seem like a good technology. I know it's kind of complicated, but we don't see yet an abundance of these outside of the very narrow context of e-readers. Herman and Corin, let's talk about technology that can minimize eye strain for those who spend a lot of time staring at a computer, which I think is almost all knowledge workers these days. Is e-ink ever going to come to maturity? And what about monitors with built-in blue light filtering? Herman and Corin, let's talk about minimizing eye strain on displays in today's episode of My Word Prompts.
You know, I was looking at our housemate Daniel's desk the other day, and it is a bit like a museum of mid-2010s technology. He has these three monitors that have somehow survived for a decade. He mentioned that one of them actually died recently, and he had to swap out a capacitor just to keep it going. But it got us thinking about what happens when those old screens finally give up the ghost.
It is impressive they lasted that long, honestly. Most consumer electronics are not exactly built for a 10-year lifespan anymore. But Daniel sent us a really interesting prompt about this. He is looking at the current landscape of display technology and wondering how much has actually changed regarding eye strain. Specifically, he is curious if e-ink is ever going to hit the mainstream for monitors, and whether these modern blue light filters built into displays are actually doing anything, or if it is just marketing.
I am Corn, by the way, and I am here with my brother, the man who probably knows more about display subpixels than is healthy for a single human being.
Herman Poppleberry, at your service. And yes, I have spent a fair amount of time staring at spectral power distribution graphs lately. It is a fascinating field because we are finally moving past the era of just making things brighter and higher resolution. We are starting to actually care about the biological impact of these light boxes we stare at for 8 to 12 hours a day.
It is a massive issue. I think nearly every knowledge worker I know complains about dry eyes, headaches, or that weird blurry vision you get at 5 in the afternoon. So, Herman, let us start with the mainstream stuff. If someone like Daniel goes out today in 2026 to buy a standard LCD or OLED monitor, they're going to see a lot of stickers promising eye care and blue light reduction. Is that actually a hardware feature now? Or is it just the same thing as that night shift mode on our phones?
That is a great place to start because there is a big distinction between software-level filtering and hardware-level optimization. In the old days, and by that I mean even 5 or 6 years ago, blue light filtering usually just meant a software toggle that turned the screen an aggressive shade of orange. It was basically just pulling the blue out of the RGB mix.
Right, which makes everything look like you are viewing the world through a glass of apple juice. It is not exactly ideal for color-accurate work, or even just enjoying a movie.
Exactly. And the problem with that software approach is that you are often just crushing the blue channel, which reduces your contrast and can actually make you strain harder to read text. But modern monitors, especially the ones with certifications like TUV Rheinland Eye Comfort 2.0 or EyeSafe 2.0, are doing something much smarter at the hardware level. They are actually shifting the peak of the blue light spectrum.
Wait, explain that. How do you shift a spectrum without changing the color?
So, the light we worry about is specifically high-energy visible light, or HEV. This usually peaks around 415 to 455 nanometers. That is the really punchy blue that is linked to retinal stress and suppressed melatonin production. What modern hardware-level low blue light technology does is use different LED phosphors to shift that peak blue emission from 450 nanometers up to about 460 or 465 nanometers.
So it is still blue light, but it is a less aggressive version of blue light.
Precisely. By moving the peak just a little bit further away from the ultraviolet end of the spectrum, you reduce the high energy impact on the eye while still maintaining a relatively accurate color balance. The screen does not look orange. It looks normal, but the actual photons hitting your eye are slightly less energetic. It is a much more elegant solution than just putting a digital filter over the image.
That is interesting, but I have always wondered if blue light is the actual culprit for eye strain. I mean, we get way more blue light from standing outside in the sun for 10 minutes than we do from a monitor in an hour, right?
You are hitting on the biggest misconception in the industry, Korn. You are absolutely right. The sun is a blue light monster compared to a computer screen. Most ophthalmologists will tell you that the strain we feel, what they call computer vision syndrome, is not necessarily caused by the blue light itself. It is caused by three other things, flicker, glare, and what we call the accommodation reflex.
Okay, let us break those down. Flicker seems like something we solved back in the days of cathode ray tube monitors. I remember those old CRTs used to have that visible pulse if the refresh rate was too low. Are modern LCDs still flickering?
They are, but in a way that is invisible to the naked eye. It is called pulse width modulation, or PWM. Most monitors control their brightness by turning the backlight on and off very rapidly. If you want 50% brightness, the backlight is off half the time. Your brain averages it out so it looks dim, but your pupils are actually reacting to that rapid-fire pulsing. It can lead to massive headaches and eye fatigue because your eye muscles are constantly trying to adjust to light that is technically strobing at hundreds or even thousands of hertz.
So, when a monitor says it is flicker-free, what are they actually doing?
They are using direct current dimming, or DC dimming. Instead of pulsing the light on and off, they just lower the voltage to the LEDs so they actually emit less light continuously. It is much harder to engineer at low brightness levels because LEDs can get finicky with color accuracy when the voltage drops, but it is significantly better for your eyes. If Daniel is looking for a new monitor, flicker-free or DC dimming is actually way more important than blue light filtering.
That is a huge tip. I feel like the marketing always leans into the blue light thing because it sounds more scientific. But the flicker is what actually makes your brain feel like it is melting after 4 hours of spreadsheets. Now, what about the glare and the accommodation reflex you mentioned?
Glare is simple but overlooked. Most modern laptops have those beautiful glossy glass screens. They look great in a dark room, but in an office with overhead lights, your eye is constantly trying to focus on two things at once, the text on the screen and the reflection of the light bulb behind you. That constant refocusing is exhausting. This is why professional monitors still use matte coatings.
And the accommodation reflex?
That is just the physical act of your eye muscles tensing to focus on something close. Human eyes were designed to look at the horizon, looking for predators or food. We are not evolved to hold a fixed focus at 20 inches for 8 hours. This is why the 20-20-20 rule is so famous. Every 20 minutes, look at something 20 feet away for 20 seconds. It literally lets the muscles in your eye relax.
It sounds like we are trying to fix a biological problem with hardware, which leads us to Daniel's other question. If the problem is that we are looking at a light box that is strobing and emitting high-energy light, why aren't we all using e-ink? I love my e-reader. I can read on that thing for hours, and it feels like paper. Why can't I have a 32-inch e-ink monitor on my desk?
Oh, the dream of the e-ink monitor. It is the holy grail for a lot of people. To understand why it is not mainstream, we have to look at how the technology actually works. Standard monitors are transmissive. There is a light in the back shining through a liquid crystal layer directly into your face. E-ink is reflective. It is electrophoretic.
Electrophoretic. That is a mouthful.
It just means it uses electricity to move physical particles. Imagine millions of tiny microcapsules. Inside each one, you have positively charged white particles and negatively charged black particles floating in a clear fluid. When you apply a charge, the black ones move to the top and the white ones move to the bottom, or vice versa.
So it is essentially like a physical painting that you are rearranging with magnets.
Exactly. And because it is physical particles, once they are in place, they stay there. You do not need any power to maintain an image. And more importantly, you do not need a backlight. You are looking at reflected ambient light just like a piece of paper. This completely eliminates the flicker problem and the light shining in your eyes problem.
So what is the catch? Why hasn't Daniel replaced his three old monitors with e-ink versions?
There are three massive hurdles: refresh rate, ghosting, and color. Let us talk about refresh rate first. A standard monitor refreshes 60 times a second, or even 144 times a second for gaming. E-ink, because it has to physically move particles through a fluid, is incredibly slow. In its high-quality mode, an e-ink screen might take half a second to fully refresh.
That would make a mouse cursor feel impossible to use. It would be like trying to navigate through a thick fog.
Exactly. You would move the mouse, and then a heartbeat later, the cursor would teleport to the new location. Now, companies like Dasung and Bigme have made huge strides here. They had developed fast refresh modes where they don't fully reset the capsules. They just do a quick, partial update. You can actually watch video on some of these modern e-ink monitors now, but the trade-off is the second hurdle, ghosting.
I have seen that on my Kindle. When I turn the page, I can sometimes see a faint shadow of the previous page.
Now imagine that on a computer screen where things are moving constantly. If you scroll down a web page, the old text leaves these gray trails everywhere. To get rid of them, the screen has to do a full flash refresh where it turns the whole screen black and then white. Doing that every few seconds is incredibly distracting for productivity work.
And then there is the color issue. Most e-ink is still grayscale, right? I know color e-ink exists, but every time I see it, it looks a bit washed out, like a Sunday newspaper comic strip from the 1990s.
That is a perfect description. Color e-ink, like the newer Spectra 6 technology we are seeing in 2026, has improved saturation significantly, but it still uses color filters or complex particle stacks. Because it is reflective, the light has to pass through the filter, hit the white particle, and bounce back through the filter again. You lose a lot of brightness. For a programmer or a writer, a grayscale e-ink monitor is actually great. But for anyone doing photo editing, web design, or even just browsing the modern colorful web, it is a tough sell.
So, is it ever going to reach maturity for the mainstream? Or is it always going to be this niche product for people with severe light sensitivity?
I think we are seeing a fork in the road. E-ink is getting better. We are seeing faster waveforms and better color, but the physics of moving particles through fluid will always be slower than moving electrons through a crystal. However, there is a middle ground that I think is more likely to go mainstream: reflective LCD or RLCD.
Wait, I haven't heard much about that. Is that what it sounds like? An LCD that does not have a backlight?
Yes. Imagine a standard LCD, but instead of a light in the back, there is a mirror-like substrate. It uses the ambient light in your room to illuminate the pixels. It has the speed of a normal monitor, so no ghosting and 60 Hz refresh rates. But it has the eye comfort benefits of e-ink because it is not shining light at you. Companies like Handspree have been pushing this tech lately with their eco-friendly paper displays.
That sounds like the best of both worlds. Why don't I have one of those?
Because they are incredibly difficult to use in low light. If your room is not perfectly lit, the screen looks very dim. And because there is a mirror in the back, the viewing angles are often terrible. But for an office environment with good lighting, RLCD could be a massive game changer. We are starting to see some tablets and smaller monitors using this, and I think that is where the mainstream eye care market might actually head.
It is funny how we have spent 40 years trying to make screens brighter and more vibrant, and now we are realizing that the ultimate goal might be to make them look like a piece of paper that does nothing.
It is the cycle of technology. We optimize for one thing until we realize we have broken something else. We optimize for clarity and color, and we accidentally broke our circadian rhythms and eye health. Now we are backtracking to find a balance.
So let us get practical for Daniel and our listeners. If you are sitting there in 2026 staring at a monitor from 2016 and your eyes are burning, what is the hierarchy of upgrades?
First, check your lighting. This is the $0 fix. Most people have their monitors too bright for their room. Your monitor should match the brightness of a white piece of paper sitting on your desk. If the screen looks like a glowing lamp, it is too bright.
That is a great tip. I definitely fall into the trap of cranking the brightness when the sun comes through the window, and then forgetting to turn it down when the clouds come over.
Second, if you are buying a new monitor, look for that TÜV Rheinland Eye Comfort certification. It is not just a sticker. It means the monitor has been tested for blue light shift, flicker-free performance, and low reflection. Most of the big players like BenQ, Dell, and Asus have specific lines dedicated to this now.
And what about the blue light glasses? Are those still a thing, or should we just stick to the monitor features?
The consensus from the American Academy of Ophthalmology is that they are mostly unnecessary if you follow good habits. Most of the strain people feel is from dry eyes because we stop blinking when we look at screens. We blink about 66% less often when we are focused on a digital display. Glasses don't fix that. Blinking and the 20/20/20 rule do.
That is such a high percentage. We literally just forget to blink because we are so absorbed in the content.
It is wild. Your eye's tear film evaporates, and that is where that burning sensation comes from. So before you spend $1,000 on a specialized e-ink monitor, try a $20 bottle of preservative-free artificial tears and a sticky note on your monitor that says, blink.
I love that. It is the classic Herman approach. High-tech analysis followed by low-tech advice. But let us go back to the e-ink thing for a second. If Daniel really wanted to try an e-ink monitor, what is the state of the market right now? I know companies like Dasung have been the leaders there for a while.
Dasung is still the king of the niche. They have their paper-like series, which is a 25-inch e-ink monitor. It is fascinating because they have a dedicated FPGA chip inside just to handle the refresh waveforms. It is essentially a custom processor that predicts how the ink particles should move to minimize ghosting. It is the closest thing to a real monitor experience you can get on e-ink.
And the price tag? I am assuming it is not cheap.
You are looking at anywhere from $800 to $1,500 for a monitor that is monochrome and has a lower resolution than a standard $400 Dell. That is why it hasn't gone mainstream. You have to really, really value eye comfort or have a medical necessity to justify that cost.
It feels like e-ink is in that weird spot where it is waiting for a massive manufacturing breakthrough. If someone could figure out how to print e-ink onto a substrate as cheaply as we make LCD panels, it would be everywhere. Imagine every bus stop, every menu board, every secondary display being e-ink.
We are seeing it in electronic shelf labels in grocery stores. That has actually driven the cost of small e-ink displays down significantly. But the large format, high-speed displays are still a boutique product. I will say, though, keep an eye on a company called E-Ink Holdings. They have been demonstrating their Gallery 3 technology and the newer Spectra 6, which is a full-color e-ink that does not use a color filter. It uses 4 or even 6 different colored particles in every pixel.
That sounds way more complex.
It is. It takes longer to refresh because you are moving more types of particles, but the color is much more vibrant. It looks like actual print. If they can get the refresh rate of Gallery 3 down to even 1 or 2 seconds, it becomes a very viable option for a secondary monitor where you keep your email or your Slack window.
I can see that. I would love a small e-ink screen just for my calendar and to-do list. Something that is always on, doesn't emit light, and just sits there like a piece of paper on a stand.
Exactly. And that is a great way to reduce your overall light exposure. You don't need your primary 40-inch OLED monitor to check your calendar.
Okay, so let us talk about OLED for a second, because that is the other big trend in monitors right now. Everyone is moving to OLED for those perfect blacks and amazing contrast. But OLED is notorious for using PWM for dimming, right? Is OLED actually worse for eye strain?
It can be. This is the irony of the current market. The most expensive, most beautiful displays are often the ones that use the most aggressive flickering to control brightness. Because OLED pixels are organic, they are very sensitive to voltage changes. If you just lower the voltage to dim them, the colors can shift or get blotchy. So, most OLED panels use a low-frequency PWM.
So if you are sensitive to flicker, an OLED might actually give you more headaches than a cheap LCD.
Potentially, yes. However, in 2026, we are seeing more tandem OLED panels and high-frequency PWM, sometimes over 3000 Hz. At those speeds, the flicker is much less likely to cause issues for the average person. But if you are someone who gets migraines or has noticed sensitivity to fluorescent lights, you really have to do your research before buying an OLED monitor. You are trading eye comfort for visual fidelity.
It is a bit of a minefield. I think Daniel is right to be cautious. You can't just buy the most expensive thing and assume it is better for your health.
Absolutely. And this brings up a second-order effect that I think is really interesting. As our screens get better and we spend more time on them, we are seeing a massive rise in myopia, or nearsightedness, in younger generations. It is not just about the light, it is about the lack of distance viewing.
I have read about that. Some countries are actually mandating that schoolchildren spend at least 2 hours outside every day just to force their eyes to focus on the horizon.
It is a physical growth issue. When you spend all day looking at something 20 inches away, your eye actually elongates over time to make that focus easier, which then makes it impossible to see things far away. So, the ultimate eye strain technology might actually be a pair of windows and a walk in the park.
It is funny how often our deep dives into technology lead us back to the conclusion that we should probably just go outside more. But since we do have to work, and Daniel does have to replace those monitors eventually, what is the verdict on the built-in blue light filtering? Is it worth paying extra for?
It is worth looking for as part of a broader eye care package. If a monitor has a hardware level blue light shift and it is flicker-free, that is a winning combination. But do not buy a monitor just because it has a blue light sticker if it still uses PWM dimming. The flicker will hurt you long before the blue light does.
That is the headline right there. Flicker is the hidden enemy. Blue light is the marketing distraction.
Exactly. And if you really want to be an early adopter, look into those RLCD monitors. They are still a bit clunky, but there is something magical about using a computer screen that feels like it is made of paper and ink rather than glowing gas and electricity.
I am curious if we will see a shift in how we design software for these types of screens. If we all started using reflective displays, we would probably go back to high-contrast black text on white backgrounds, rather than the dark mode everything we see today.
Oh, definitely. Dark mode is actually terrible for e-ink and RLCD because of how the particles move. We have spent the last 5 years making everything dark to save battery on OLEDs, but if we move back toward eye comfort displays, we might see the return of the bright, clean interface.
It is a fascinating seesaw. I think we have covered a lot of ground here. We have debunked some of the blue light myths. We have highlighted the danger of flicker, and we have looked at the current state of the e-ink dream.
It is a good reminder that our eyes are arguably our most important interface with the world. We spend thousands of dollars on GPUs and CPUs, but we often neglect the two biological cameras that are actually processing all that data.
Well said. And hey, if you are listening to this on a screen right now, maybe take a second to look out the window. Follow that 20-20-20 rule. Your ciliary muscles will thank you.
And while you are giving your eyes a break, if you have found this discussion helpful, we would really appreciate it if you could leave us a review on your podcast app or on Spotify. It genuinely helps other people find the show, and we love hearing from our listeners.
Absolutely. We have been doing this for 379 episodes now, and the community feedback is what keeps us going. If you want to dive deeper into any of our past topics, you can find the whole archive at myweirdprompts.com. There is a search bar there, so you can look up anything from our early episodes to the most recent ones.
We have a contact form there too, if you want to send in a prompt like Daniel did. We are always looking for new rabbit holes to jump down.
Thanks to Daniel for the prompt. And thanks to all of you for listening. This has been My Weird Prompts. I am Korn.
And I am Herman Poppleberry. We will see you in the next one.
Stay curious, and don't forget to blink.
Seriously, blink right now.
Catch you later.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox Turbo.
Thanks for listening to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring Daniel Rosehill's AI prompts, as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters including me, Cornelius the Sloth. Subscribe on Spotify or visit myweirdprompts.com.